Good morning, everybody. This meeting is being recorded. It is 8:30 a.m. on Tuesday, April 23rd, 2024. Dr. Bustillo, after you call the meeting to order, we will proceed with a roll call of board members and staff and read the mission statement.
Good morning. I'd like to call the State Board of Physical Therapy meeting to order for 4/23/24.
All right. And doing a roll call of board members first, Dr. Bustillo.
Here.
Dr. King.
Here.
Mr. Leone.
Here.
Mr. Greer.
Here.
Mr. Barton.
I am here.
Oh, he is here. Fabulous. Thank you. Dr. Hike.
Here.
And staff, Ms. Crowley.
Here.
Ms. Bryant.
Here.
Ms. Richardson.
Present.
Ms. Sinish. Let the record reflect that Ms. Sinish is not here at the moment. We do expect her to join later. My name is Judy Chepius. I do believe that Dr. Hike has been nominated to read the board's mission statement today. Dr. Hike, if you will.
All right. The mission of the Arizona State Board of Physical Therapy is to protect the public from the incompetent, unprofessional, and unlawful practice of physical therapy. Arizona Physical Therapy Practice Act establishes standards for the practice of physical therapy, continuing competence and testing, and defines the scope and limitations of practice. The board licenses and certifies qualified applicants as physical therapists and physical therapy assistants, and receives, investigates, and educates complaints against licensees and certificate holders.
Fantastic. Thank you. Dr. Bustillo, the meeting is yours.
Thank you, Dr. Hike, and welcome back to the board. We're really happy to have you back and look forward to your input.
Thank you.
Next order of business is to approve the regular session meeting minutes for March 26, 2024. Are there any additions or corrections?
This is Mr. Barton. I move that we approve the meetings as submitted, or the meeting minutes as submitted.
Second.
Any discussion? Okay. Let's call the question.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the March 22nd, 2024, excuse me, March 26th, 2024 regular session meeting minutes. Dr. Bustillo.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
Dr. Hike.
Abstain.
Thank you. That motion passes.
Next item is to approve the executive session A meeting minutes for March 26, 2024.
I would move to approve the executive session meeting minutes for March 26th.
Second.
Any discussion? Okay, Judy.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the March 26, 2024 executive session A meeting minutes. Dr. Bustillo.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Abstain.
Thank you. That motion passes.
Okay, on to item number four, applications for licensure and certification. A, review, consideration, and possible action on physical therapist applicants requesting ADA accommodations. Nasri Hatter, is Nasri on the line?
Yes, good morning.
Morning. Would you be willing to answer questions from the board?
Yes, absolutely.
Great. Thank you. Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Hatter?
Mr. Hatter, this is Joshua Greer. And
Thank you for your application. We've reviewed it. What we'd like to know is, outside of your educational experiences, have you required or obtained any accommodations in your day-to-day life, for example, with employment, driving, going to the store, etc.?
Thank you for your question. And no, it's only been education-based accommodations. And it was mainly instituted since my beginning of my graduate program at Marist College for my Doctor of Physical Therapy. But prior to that, I'd never had any accommodations, and it was only strictly for written exams during school.
And so during your rotations, you didn't require any additional accommodations?
No, sir.
Thank you.
I have a question. On the application, it actually states that accommodations were received for the national PT exam. Have you taken the exam before?
I took it one time in January, and thankfully I passed. I did receive the same accommodations that I received during written exams during PT school for the NPTE as well.
Okay. So for the accommodations that you're looking for, what is this for
the law exam? Yeah, that's the last step in terms of application wise. That's the last thing I have to take.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Have you had any, we have the evaluation from 2021. Has there been any subsequent evaluation since?
No, I have not had any evaluation since.
Mr. Hattar, this is Mr. Barton. If you are kind of uncomfortable answering more medical questions, we can do so kind of in a executive session. But what I would like to know is, are you receiving any kind of treatment for these diagnoses, or is it only related to just test taking at school?
Fortunately, I have not taken any medication or any kind of treatment for my conditions. It's strictly just in a written exam setting. Luckily, I've been able to kind of manage it, control it, learn through PT school how to manage it as well. And I'm proud to say that it hasn't affected anything in terms of a practical sense. So my rotations, it wasn't affecting me. It was strictly just when I sit for a written exam during those, you know, strenuous hours. That's where it really got to me. Luckily, I have not taken any medication. I haven't felt the need to. And after my diagnosis was made and we made a plan with my educators and my instructors, things kind of took a turn in terms of performance academically. And that's where kind of everything kind of fell into place after that. So no, I have not gotten any medication for it. It's only been strictly academic, but luckily I've been able to get through it.
Okay. Thank you.
No problem.
Mr. Hattar, it's Kelly King. What strategies do you use when you're in a really highly stressful situation? What are some things that you do to bring yourself down?
I remember that the worst case scenario is usually in my head and not in reality, and that kind of helps me get through it. And then from there, it's just mapping things out in a logical sense. So I use my logic, chronological steps of what I need to do, and just take the first step that's in front of me. I might not see all 10 steps that are ahead down the road, but at least take the first one in front of me, don't freeze, and just act accordingly and move slowly. And that's usually what gets my anxiety to calm down. And then after that, all the information that I know I studied and prepared for kind of falls back into place. It's just managing that stress. And then once that's in control, it's just smooth sailing from there.
And I have a question for your prior ADA accommodation for the national exam. Was that awarded to you through a board or through the FSVPT?
So what happened with that is when I applied to take the exam through FSVPT, I had to send them a copy of my diagnoses, the same thing I sent to you, to the Board of Physicians in Arizona, and as well as New York State had to be aware of it too, which is kind of what delayed my exam taking process. But once everyone had the appropriate paperwork and the school also was able to vouch for me, luckily, because I used the same diagnoses and same report to get my accommodations to the school, it all added up together to get my accommodations for the NPTE.
Through the FSBPT?
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Hattar, have you had to use the extra time?
Yes, I did use it.
Any further questions? Okay. Do we have a motion?
This is Mr. Greer. I would move to deny the request for ADA accommodations. I do not see a disability that affects a daily life function as required by the ADA. It appears based on the applicant's statements that these are solely related to educational. The ADA is adopted to provide access to the test, not to ensure success. And for those reasons, I move to deny.
Second.
Any further discussion?
I think this just kind of puts us in a very weird position when somebody is approved for something like this on the MPTE, and you know, based off all the information that we have received from ADA, you know, I think we know, you know, this is not an appropriate situation to, you know, give those accommodations. So it kind of creates this little bit of an awkward situation here, but I'm in favor of the motion as well.
And just addressing your comments, you know, we see this all the time where there are lots of educational institutions that have a vested interest in making sure their students succeed, and you know, we want to make sure that they're competent to practice physical therapy, and so our interest is different. And I understand that people have obtained oftentimes accommodations of their entire educational career, will frequently have to be the bad guy, and it's uncomfortable for us, but yeah. I agree, based on the instruction we've received, you know, this case doesn't arise to an ADA accommodation.
Yeah, I agree. Yep.
Any further discussion? Okay, I think we're ready for the question then, Judy.
It's been moved and seconded to deny Nasri Hatter's request for ADA accommodations. Dr. Basile?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hyde, can you repeat? Can anybody hear him?
No.
He's going to go out and come back in, he said.
Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good lip reading / sign language / we knew you were talented, Dr. King.
Nonverbal communication.
Dr. Hike, are you back?
Yes. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Yeah. I vote yes as well.
Thank you.
Sorry for the delay.
No problem. That motion passes.
Okay, so good luck to you, Mr. Hatter, on the exam. We wish you the best on that.
Thank you.
And then going on to review, consideration, and possible action on physical therapist applicants who graduated from foreign educated programs. Mm-hmm. Our first one is Heba Amaraya. Is she present?
Good morning. Present.
Good morning. Do we have...
Yeah, I can present that. So the board received a memorandum for Heba Amaraya. I apologize if I've mispronounced the name. A foreign, a foreign educated physical therapist who graduated from a program that's not U.S. accredited by CAPTI. Ms. Amira's foreign education was found to be substantially equivalent through her educational credentialing. So the board is requested to review that and verify whether the board sees it as substantially equivalent. If so, the board may choose to license or require a supervised clinical practice period upon the successful completion of the NPTE and or AZ law exams and final application pieces. The matters for your review.
Well, it seems like the credentialing is in place and that she should be allowed to sit for the NPTE and AZ law and then complete a 500-hour supervised clinical practice period prior to practice.
If that's a motion, I will second that.
Any other discussion? Okay. Let's call the question.
It's been moved and seconded to approve Heba Amira's education as substantially equivalent and allow her to sit for the NPTE and AZ law exams and require a supervised clinical practice period of 500 hours. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great. Good luck to you. I hope it goes well.
Thank you so much.
Next is Ashuria Pradham.
Mm-hmm. Again, I apologize if the pronunciation of the name is incorrect. Is Ms. Pradham on the call?
Yes. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. So the board received a memorandum in the application of Ashira Pradhan, a foreign educated physical therapist who graduated from a program that is not U.S. accredited by the Commission on Accreditation of Physical Therapy, commonly known as CAPTI. Ms. Pradhan's foreign education was found to be established substantially equivalent through her educational credentialing. The board is requested to review to confirm that determination. It's also important to note that Ms. Pradhan has been practicing in the U.S. since 2014. She is licensed elsewhere, I believe. I thought we had other states there. I can't remember exactly where she's licensed.
Indiana.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So she has been practicing in the U.S. healthcare system. So the board is requested to determine whether it views the applicant's education as substantially equivalent, whether the applicant is able to test, she would need the AZ law exam, and whether or not the applicant would be required to complete a supervised clinical practice period.
Thank you. Ms. Pradhan, where have you been practicing? What type of facility or patient population have you been working with?
I've been working in a skilled nursing facility since 2014, and I've been with the same company for about 10 years. I'm the supervising physical therapist for two PTAs and one therapy aide. And I mostly work with the geriatric population, but between ages of 50 and more above. And my skilled nursing is also associated with an assisted living and an independent living. So we also do offer outpatient services to that population there. So I'm also the supervising PT and evaluating therapist for that. And I've done all the continuing education for required for the state of Indiana, which is 22 contact hours. And I've been consistent with that. I do my continuing education in wound care, in lymphedema, and stroke education. We do have a company that comes in that is with our company that will come and do like training with us, like in-person training with us for stroke education, e-stim, manual therapy, anything that will help us provide better care for our patients.
Okay, great. And have you relocated then to Arizona now? Is that your...
No, I'm not. I am actually just waiting for my license to be approved, because since I am on an H-1B visa, like I already do have a job in Arizona. I just am waiting for like my license to be approved, because they do want the proof that my license have been approved after I give the AZ law exam. And once that is done, I'll be able to move to Arizona.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I'm going to move that we approve Ms. Pradhan for taking the AZ law exam for licensure.
Second.
And determining her education is substantially equivalent?
Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
And assuming she does not need a supervised clinical practice period?
Yes. Okay. She does not.
Okay, perfect.
Judy, I wanted to just clarify. I know in our statutes, there's times when it is required, but if they've already been practicing as a PT, I don't think we have to require it, do we?
Right. I'm paraphrasing. I don't know the exact phrasing, but if they've got, if they're licensed in another state, have U.S. working experience, the board has the ability to waive the requirement for a supervised clinical practice period.
Got it. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Any further discussion? All right, let's call the question.
It's been moved and seconded to approve Ashira Pradhan's education as substantially equivalent and allow her to sit for the AZ Law Jurisprudence exam and to waive the requirement for a supervised clinical practice period. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
And Judy, before we go on, just a just a note of a typo. The date of her NPTE exam is 10/32/0213. So maybe correct that before we finalize her file. I don't know if it's 2021 or 2013.
2013.
Where did you see that, Kelly?
It's on the very first page of the confidential memorandum in our files. It's got a table and it's got her total credit.
Yeah, you're exactly correct.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
I figured it was 2013, but I just want to make sure it's cleaned up.
Yeah. Yeah, we haven't quite gotten that far in the calendar yet. Okay. Monica or Phoenix, I anticipate, has taken that note and we'll get that corrected.
All right. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Okay. So good luck to you and good luck with your move to Arizona.
Thank you so much. Have a good day, everyone. Bye-bye.
You too.
Thanks.
And third under this category is for Ian Miguel Aysen. Is he on the call?
Yes, I'm present. Good morning.
Great. Good morning.
So the board has in its file a memorandum and application for Ian Miguel Aysen, a foreign educated therapist who graduated from a program that is not U.S. accredited by the Commission on Accreditation of Physical Therapy Education, otherwise known as CAPTE. Mr. Aysen's foreign education was found to be substantially equivalent through his educational credentialing. Mr. Aysen was previously presented to the board on February 28th, 2023. He's being re-presented after submitting a new application due to the previous attempts at the National Physical Therapy Exam. At the time, the board approved his education as substantially equivalent, allowed him to sit for the NPTE and AZ Law, and required a supervised clinical practice period of 500 hours. The board is requested to make those same considerations again to determine whether Mr. Aysen can move forward in the same manner. he does not have any U.S. work experience. He is not licensed in any other state. He still needs to pass the NPTE first.
Okay. I move that we accept his education as substantially equivalent, approving him to take the NPTE and the jurisprudence exam and complete, once those are successfully passed, complete 500 hours of supervised clinical practice, unless we want to require more.
I would second the 500 hours, Dr. King.
Any further discussion? Okay, I think we're ready.
It's been moved and seconded to approve Mr. Ian Miguel Aysen's education as substantially equivalent, allow him to sit for the NPTE and AZ law exams, and require a supervised clinical practice period of 500 hours. Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much, everyone. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. We're going to move on to number 5, our consent agenda. Is there anyone that anyone feels needs to be pulled off of the consent agenda?
This is Mr. Barton. I move that we approve all items on the consent agenda.
Second.
Any further discussion?
Is that Mr. Leone for the second?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we're ready.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda, including items in 5A and 5B. Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Perfect. Okay. We have an informal hearing, but it's not time for that yet. So we're going to move on to number 9, which will be initial review and preliminary review here. And I have a script for an initial review that we need to read.
Dr. Bustillo, may I interject just in case
the
individuals are on any of those individuals whose name was on the consent agenda or the previous application reviews? You are more than welcome to stay if you'd like, but you are not required to do so. So just if you have any questions after the meeting, you can contact the board staff. Thank you, Dr. Bustillo. I had a lot of questions beforehand what they were required to say. So I just
thanks, Judy. I really appreciate that. It clears up a lot of things for them. All right, so we're going to move on to our initial reviews and script we need to read here. This is the time and place scheduled for a board's initial review of complaints. There are 2 cases for the board to consider. One's an initial review and one's a preliminary review. Pursuant to its authority under ARS 32-2045. For everyone's benefit, I will provide a brief summary on how the board conducts initial reviews. The summary applies to all cases that we will hear today, and I will not repeat it for each case. First, I will begin with introductions. My name is Dr. Bustillo, and I am the board's chairperson. I'll now ask the other board members to introduce themselves.
I am Kelly King, physical therapist, vice president of the board.
Giovanni Leone, PTA, secretary of the board.
Joshua Greer, public member.
Joshua Barton, public member.
John Hike, physical therapist, professional member.
Thank you. For those participating in the initial reviews, please be aware that we have read all the materials submitted. If at any time it is necessary to refer to patients, please use initials only. In each case, the board will first hear a brief summary of the investigative report from its staff. Once staff is done, the board will ask if the complainant, if present, if they wish to address the board, and then the board will ask the professional, if present, and their attorney, if represented, if they would like to do the same. In order to give everyone the same opportunity to address the board, we ask that those speaking not take time repeating information that the board has already received. You will be given the same amount of time to address the board that it took to present the investigative report, or 5 minutes, whichever is greater. Please keep in mind that this is not the time or place for the complainant and the professional to address each other. The board has a civility policy that prohibits the use of any type of disruptive conduct. Those violating the policy after being given the opportunity to modify their behavior will be removed from the meeting. Once the board concludes its discussion with the parties, it will move into deliberations. While the parties are free to stay and listen to deliberations, we ask that you respect the fact that we are now discussing the case amongst ourselves and request that you do not interrupt that process. The board's options include, but are not limited to, dismissing the complaint, taking non-disciplinary action such as issuing an advisory letter or order for continuing education, offering the professional a consent agreement, requesting the professional participate in an informal hearing, or remanding the matter to a formal hearing. Before we call the first case, I want to advise everyone that that the initial reviews are audio recorded. Accordingly, it is important that everyone speak loudly and clearly and that only one person speak at a time. Lastly, as a reminder to the board, this is not a formal hearing, and this is not an informal hearing. If you have a few questions that will help you better understand the case and take action potentially to resolve the case through dismissal, non-disciplinary action, or a consent agreement for either disciplinary or non-disciplinary action, please feel free to ask them. However, if you have a number of substantive questions and or feel the case requires additional investigation, it may be more appropriate to move the case to an informal hearing. So our first case is case 2402, Michael Smelzer, PTA.
Good morning, members of the board. I'm representing this case on behalf of Dr. Sinesh, who will be joining us later this morning. I've looked at the attendees, and I don't see that Mr. Smelzer has entered the meeting. I just want to double check. Mr. Smelzer, are you in the meeting? And she also informed me that a complainant, BW, was not going to be able to attend. This complaint was filed by a patient, BW, who alleged that the treatment provided by Mr. Smelzer, who's a PTA, on January 29th of 2024 increased her pain. She alleged that she was not told that Mr. Smelzer was a PTA, and she believed that he was a PT. She stated that Mr. Smelzer had a secretary starter treatment with exercises that were painful. He then did manual treatments, which also increased her pain. BW found out that he was not a physical therapist when she called the clinic later that day to request a different physical therapist because of the increased pain she had during and after the appointment. The potential statute violations in the investigative report that were included for you to consider are ARS 32-2044-5, engaging in the performance of substandard care by a physical therapist assistant, ARS 32-2044-13, charging unreasonable or fraudulent fees for services performed or not performed, ARS 32-2044-20, failing to maintain adequate records, and as it relates to R-424-304, adequate patient records. This case is for your review. I think Liz expected Mr. Melzer to be. She didn't tell me that he wasn't going to be here, so I
think. Yeah. I think that there's a lot of questions I have for him. And I know we could take an action now because I'm not going to ask for any additional investigative information, but I also like to always give the licensee an opportunity to speak to us about their side of the story. But I think this is just what we have, I think, is significant enough to move it to an informal hearing. So that's my motion, is to move this to an informal hearing.
I would second that.
Dr. King, would you add the additional violations of unreasonable fees and record keeping?
Yes. Yes. Thank you, to Mr. Gary.
And then would you like to see some additional chart review then as well?
I guess I would. Yes. Honestly, let's try to maybe do it. Look at a couple more. Is that what you were going to ask too, Karen?
No, I absolutely agree that without the licensee present, there are questions that I would like to hear his side of the story. And and I would like to see some additional record review.
Okay. Would you like to let maybe two in that same time frame around this complaint, or more recent?
Either is fine.
This was just in January, I think.
Yeah.
So it's still pretty current. Okay.
Two additional records concurrent sometime since January.
Yes, thank you.
Do you want them orthopedically based? Does it matter, the diagnosis?
I don't think so.
Okay. No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Any further discussion?
Just a point of clarification for my notes. I didn't catch the parameters of the additional records.
Who?
And were the specifics associated with the additional records that need to be reviewed?
Since January, since around this time frame, January to now, sometime in there, specific to any particular diagnosis.
Okay, thank you.
And because it's a PTA, it'll just be daily treatment notes.
Okay.
Would you want to see the initial evaluation, though, to see what they're going off of?
Yes. Well, hopefully that would be in the chart when we review.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry. Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Giovanni.
Any further discussion? Okay. Let's call the question.
First, can you please repeat who seconded the motion?
I think it was me.
It was Leonie.
It was Karen.
It was me.
Mr. Leonie.
That was me or Karen, I know that.
Yeah, either one. Pick one.
Sorry to put you on the spot like that.
I had Mr. Leone. King moved, seconded by Leone.
Perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome.
The good reason there's more than one of us taking notes here. It's been moved and seconded to invite Mr. Smelzer to an informal hearing and to request additional investigation of two additional records for treatment occurring after January 2024. And to include all of the potential violations outlined in the investigative report. Dr. Bastillo.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
Mr. Hike. Dr. Hike, excuse me. More lip reading.
I think I see him waving his head up and down.
Yeah,
so I'm assuming
looks like he
yes,
left the meeting and we'll come back.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
I don't know what's going on.
Dr. Hike, did you vote aye or nay on that motion to move aye. To an informed hearing? Thank you. That motion passes.
Okay, and then we'll look at the preliminary review for EM.
Yes, and I believe EM and his counsel, Sarah Stark, are present. The board received a National Practitioner Data Bank report where EM, who is a physical therapist, was summarily suspended from clinical practice from his then employer in June of 2023 due to concerns of suspected misconduct that adversely affects or could adversely affect the health and welfare of a patient or staff member. The subsequent employer investigation documents that sexual harassment of a female coworker was substantiated and was witnessed by staff and or patients. The investigation also documented additional episodes of inappropriate behavior by EM towards other coworkers, which included sexual references and which sometimes occurred in front of patients. EM denied the allegations in his written response to the employer's investigation. He waived his right to appeal the findings and decision and tendered his resignation on July 12th of 2023. EM's current work status is unknown, but he is currently licensed in Arizona. The board may consider opening a case with the following potential violations or take no action. ARS 3224-12, failing to adhere to the recognized standards of ethics of the physical therapy profession, including Principle 1, a physical therapist shall respect the rights and dignity of all individuals and shall provide compassionate care. And Principle 11, a physical therapist shall respect the rights, knowledge, and skill of colleagues and other healthcare professionals. This matters for your review.
EM, would you or your counsel like to make a statement or be willing to answer questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Sarah Stark. I'm counsel for EM. So it's our understanding that the employer has not finalized its investigation or made a final determination on the allegations. And I think that's reflected in the data bank report as well. It's a summary action and the language states that upon, you know, final outcome, they will then repost something on the data bank. So at this time, we don't really have anything to add other than that it's our understanding that this matter with the employer is still pending and any final outcomes will be, you know, subsequently posted or updated. Thank you.
Is EM currently working in Arizona?
EM, you can answer that question. The answer is yes.
Okay.
Is he working as a physical therapist? I guess that's a better question.
Yes, that's my understanding. And EM, you can chime in if I'm incorrect.
And what setting is he working in?
EM, can you unmute yourself and answer that question?
Thank you. That's in trouble. Yes, I am working in Arizona in an outpatient general population clinic at this time.
That was hard to hear. Was it? Did he say outpatient? He said outpatient.
Outpatient, pardon. Correct.
EM, could you mute?
EM, you.
Ms. Stark, I've reviewed the file. What exactly are you waiting for? It appears that this is, I'm looking at the March 1st, 2024 memorandum. It looks like this is final.
We don't have a memorandum from March 1st, 2024. We have a letter from June 26, 2023.
You don't have the memorandums, notice failure to request continuation of due process.
Nope.
There's no written request to continue due process was received within the allotted time, and therefore the QAI will be completed and forwarded to the MTF privileging authority through credentials. If the decision to take a clinical adverse action or report will be sent to the national practice. You don't have that?
No,
no, they weren't provided the DOD report as part of the preliminary review because the case hadn't been opened yet.
Yeah, so from the last correspondence that EM received from the employer is June 26th of 2023, where it says essentially that depending on the final action decision, a revision to action report will be submitted to the NPDB upon the final action decision and completion of the matter.
But I did send you the National Practitioner Data Bank report.
Right. We do have that. Right.
Yeah, I did receive that.
Yeah. And that's a summary, you know, a summary action. And it also says in the language that, you know, upon the final resolution, you know, the report will be updated.
Judy, on page 13, did he sign this? I know it's redacted. Do you not see the redactions either? It looks like he signed it.
I believe he did.
Yeah, Sarah, it looks like he signed this memo. I know you don't have it. I know you don't have it, but I think your client received it and signed it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So. And again, like I said, I don't have it. So if I don't know when you can give it to me, if you can give it to me, that would be helpful. You know,
and I guess this is the question that I have. Knowing it appears that this was, and I'm looking at page 15, this was mailed to your client on March 4th, 2024. It looks like he signed it, turned it. Knowing that it appears to be final, does that change your position at all?
Again, without looking at what you guys are looking at, I think it's hard for me to change it in this moment. Like, I'm certainly happy to look at what you guys have and change my opinion if necessary. It's hard for me without looking at the actual documentation and then talking back to the government that, you know, but, does that make sense?
It does. I'm having a hard time hearing you because of the background noise on EM, but I know what you're saying.
EM, could you mute yourself, please? Yeah, I'm happy to look at whatever you guys are willing to provide me and, you know, we can regroup, but, you know, I can't change it right now without seeing the documents that y'all are working on.
Mr. Greer, if you look on page 16, there's an acknowledgement that's not signed, so I suspect that the redacted portion on page 15 may be just a verification that they sent it. I don't know if that changes the math at all.
Well, you know, I'm looking at 16, you know, page 15 is the verification that they sent it. Page 16 is the unsigned version that's not redacted. And then you go down to page 13, you have a redaction. So I'm just assuming that he signed it there.
Mm-hmm.
A copy of what was mailed.
Maybe he didn't, but that's what I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. Regardless, I don't think it changes what I want to do with this case.
Yeah.
And Madam President, if it's okay, I'd like to make a motion. I don't want to cut off discussion.
Yeah, feel free.
I would move that we open a case for violation of ARS 32-2044-12, failure to adhere to the recognized standards of ethics of physical therapy profession, Principle 1 and Principle 11.
Second. Is there any further discussion?
Assuming now that we've opened a case assuming if we open a case, Ms. Stark will get the investigative file.
Correct. Okay.
Okay. No further discussion. Then I think we're ready for the question.
It's been moved and seconded to open a complaint against EM for further investigation of ARS 32-2044-12, failure to adhere to the recognized standards of ethics in the physical therapy profession as it relates to Principle 1 and Principle 2. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
I just want to correct Principle 1 and Principle 11, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
My apologies. I read the 1-1 as 2.
Yes.
Thank you.
Great. So the board will be in contact with you then about further action.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay, I think we're moving on here to number 10, compact matters, review, consideration, and action. For case 2385, Catherine Cottrell, PT, is Dr. Cottrell on the line?
This is Cody Hall, her counsel. She just texted me and said she was finishing up an evaluation. And I'm trying to get her to see if she is back online, but I don't think she is right yet. And she's still logged in, I see, but I don't think she's in with her computer, I believe. So sorry about that. I'm going to give her a call real quick and see if I can get her to jump on.
Okay.
Dr. Bastillo, if you want to re-agendize anything, we can do the official welcome of Dr. Drake or anything.
Oh, well, I thought I did that at the very beginning, but I may not have.
There's also 12A. I don't think that take much time either.
12A, we have to inform attorney ahead of time. So we can certainly do that if you want to rearrange it and have her come on.
I did just receive a text message from Dr. Cottrell. She said she needs about 3 minutes. I apologize for that. Timing is always a mess in these things, and I misjudged it this morning. So.
Well, we seem to be moving along, so.
Yes, you're moving very quickly.
Are there a section or two of the executive director's report maybe that we could knock out while we're waiting for a couple of minutes?
Certainly can. We certainly can. Would you like updates on SB 1267 and 1255?
Yes.
I would love them.
Fantastic. I am here to make sure that we are in business. As soon as I find my notes. Okay. So Senate Bill 1267, which was sponsored by the Arizona APTA chapter, passed the second read in the House on March 13th, 2024, and the House Health and Human Services Committee on March 18th, 2024. At this time, and just confirmed this morning, the status of Senate Bill 1267 remains unchanged from that which the board heard at its March 26th meeting. The good news is Senate Bill 1255, the board's continuation bill, was signed by Governor Hobbs on April 16th of this year. This bill repeals ARS 41-3024.02, which sunsetted the Board of Physical Therapy on July 1st, 2024, and instead continues the board through July 1st of 2032. So that gives us a little bit of time before we go through that process again.
And we all get to keep our jobs.
For now, yes. For now, yes. Lovely.
Yeah, I just heard from Dr. Cottrell. She said she is on and available if you wanted to move back to item 10A. Pat, can you unmute and make sure you're available?
Yeah. Okay. Judy, can you do an overview?
This one I will represent Liz, Dr.
Thank
Simon.
You.
Matter. Yep. Dr. Cottrell was practicing in Arizona on a compact privilege obtained on July 5th of 2022 based on her home state license from Louisiana. She obtained an Arizona driver's license on February 24th of 2023, which changed her home state to Arizona. Compact rules required her to notify them of a change in home state within 30 days, which would have terminated her AZ compact privilege on or before April 7th of 2023. Excuse me. She did not notify them and instead renewed her Arizona PT compact privilege on March 5th by using her Louisiana driver's license and then continued to work in Arizona on that compact privilege. When she renewed, Dr. Cottrell did not take the required jurisprudence exam. She was given a 30-day grace period and did pass the exam within the grace period. However, she was audited by the compact and submitted her Arizona driver's license. She was notified by the compact of the requirement to report the change of address within 30 days. Dr. Cottrell did not notify the compact of her change of address until October 5th. Dr. Cottrell practiced for approximately 13 weeks without a valid Arizona PT license. She returned to work on September 18th and worked until October 5th. This matter was heard by the board as a preliminary review at the October 31st, 2023 meeting. The board voted to open a case with the following potential violations. ARS 32-2044-3, obtaining or attempting to attain a license or certificate by fraud or misrepresentation. ARS 32-2044-14, making misleading, deceptive, untrue, or fraudulent representations in violation of this chapter in the practice of the profession, and ARS 32-2044-2, practicing or offering to practice beyond the scope of the practice of physical therapy. This matters for your review.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. Mr. Hall, do you have anything that you'd like to say?
Nothing further than what I had previously added, which is that it is my understanding that the IR report has concluded that there was no violation of ARS 32-2044-2, and then my argument as well that the investigation has not supported the fact that Dr. Cottrell actually intended to deceive or to commit fraud upon the board in trying to get licensure. At best, it was a simple mistake of not understanding the ramifications of getting an Arizona driver's license. At no point in time did anybody in the compact inform Dr. Cottrell that she had effectively terminated her compact license by applying for an Arizona license. And she did apply for her Arizona license through universal recognition on March 18th of 2023. So she was taking the steps that she thought was necessary and reasonable for her to obtain her Arizona license. And I would ask that if the board cannot see fit to dismiss this complaint because it was an honest mistake, I think the appropriate response would be to do an advisory letter because I think that addresses any of the board's concerns. And then I do have, again, I've got Dr. Cottrell is on the line, hopefully I'm able to answer any questions if you have of her. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions for Dr. Cottrell?
Just to be clear, so when you originally signed up for the compact, Dr. Cottrell, there was nothing in anything that you read that said that if you switch your license to a different state, that you're now in violation of the compact. Is that accurate?
Hey, so when I originally, or when I did my compact, I thought that since my Louisiana license, it was still active, that I could still go through the compact, kind of through both, which was wrong, and I was confused. So if it in the paperwork said that, then I just miss it. And so I take full responsibility for that.
Okay. And then how long were you treating prior to your universal recognition coming through? Was it 13 weeks, you said?
I think so.
Okay, but you were treating during that time frame based off of the idea that you had a compact license?
Yes, except for those 3 months where I was on maternity leave.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
How long have you been in Arizona?
I was here doing travel therapy before. So I've been here since July of, so like 2 years, because I did travel therapy here first. Sorry.
So you were in and out just a little bit doing the travel therapy and then made a more permanent residence here?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Still kind of working off that compact and your Louisiana license?
Right. So when I was doing travel therapy, I was just doing the compact.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Kinderl, what made you decide to obtain an Arizona driver's license in February of 2023?
My Louisiana license was set to expire in June, and that's when my baby was due, because I was, 6 months pregnant, I guess, at the time. And so I figured we were going to stay in the state. And so I decided to get an Arizona licensure while I had time, rather than wait until June. And then my Louisiana one would lapse. And then that was a whole other mess.
And just so I understand, you decided to get an Arizona driver's license because you needed to get an Arizona PT license?
Right. So I wanted to get the Arizona, and this is where I got really confused with which path to follow as far as the universal recognition and the other options, was, so then I saw the universal recognition. I knew I had to update my driver's license. So then I was like, I'll get the Arizona licensure or driver's license so that I can do the universal recognition. And that was not the way to go. And so that's my fault.
What did you think the correct way to go would be? It sounds like this is exactly the way to go for what you wanted to accomplish.
Right, but I wish I would have, I wish I wouldn't have messed up the compact. I wish I would have gotten my Arizona licensure probably maybe even when I traveled here. That way I could already have it. And then that, I mean, it wouldn't be any of this problem. Or I wouldn't have caused this much of an issue. So I wish I would have just done that while I was practicing in Phoenix under the compact, even if I wasn't going to stay. So that would have been a better path for me.
To clarify for the board members, universal recognition requires Arizona residence. Compact privilege, active compact privilege, cannot be used for the state in which is your home state, evidenced by your driver's license. So when you establish residency, you have a conflict with the compact, as well as attempting to get a license with the pathway that requires residency. So there's an inherent conflict between an active compact privilege and application by universal recognition based on the residency requirement or disallowing for the compact privilege.
Is there any sort of a grace period that the compact recognizes? Because I guess where I'm kind of struggling is, if you have a compact license, how are you supposed to go through universal recognition if once you get your Arizona residency, it completely negates your compact license? So are you just basically not to work at that point?
Well, if that's the path that you choose, on the website, there's indication that the compact privilege and universal recognition are not compatible. There are certain individuals who choose that and then who stop working to accommodate the universal recognition. Okay. But for an individual who has an active compact license, was U.S. educated, there is also the process of endorsement, which they can work on a compact privilege as well. But there's with the compact privilege, there's requirements for the privilege holder based on their home state, as well as requirements to keep the compact privilege updated when their residency changes.
the residency issue then becomes an issue with the universal recognition application. There are other options that can be sought that are compatible with compact privileges, just not universal recognition.
Got it.
Okay. That actually answers the question for me too. So it sounds like that the issue is that the, because we run into this a lot, and it seems like what's happening is these are folks who should be looking for an endorsement and instead are seeking universal. Is that correct?
So there's two issues. Yes, that's a sub issue. The primary issue in these circumstances is that the individual changes their state of residence, doesn't follow through with the compact as they're informed to do, renews that compact privilege using a previous state's driver's license as opposed to the one that they've already obtained. And then seeking, licensure through universal recognition.
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out, Judy, because that is where I'm really getting stuck. So, Ms. Petrell, you got your driver's license here in Arizona in February. Did you notify the Louisiana State PT Board within 30 days of your change of address as
No.
required by your statute? So no?
No.
Okay. So you didn't notify your own board, and then you renewed your compact using your old Louisiana driver's license.
Right.
Okay. That's an issue.
Right. I understand. I want to say I was thinking that because my Louisiana license was still good until June that I was okay, but I understand now, like looking back at it, that doesn't make sense at all. I understand.
You understand that once you have a driver's license and residence in one state, any other driver's license in any other state's invalid, right?
Right.
Okay. And so knowing that, you still put in your old Louisiana driver's license. So it really looks suspicious to
right.
anyone reading your file, right? It doesn't look like a mistake. It looks very intentional. And thought out, you didn't notify your board. So you didn't follow our rules nor the Louisiana State PT Board rules.
Right. So I understand how it looks. And I do understand how that process got mixed up for me. Just between moving states and getting everything together, honestly, it was my mistake.
So my question for you guys is, does this fall under the same matrix for unlawful practice then that we use with people who don't renew their license on time and continue to practice?
I would think so.
I would think so as well. Thanks for bringing that up. Mm-hmm. And so Judy, remind us how long she practiced?
13 weeks.
13 weeks.
91 days.
Okay.
So our matrix kind of ends at 90 days, and then comes before the board.
Yeah, that's where we're at.
But we can kind of use that maybe as a, mm-hmm. beginning point for
are we finished with the questions? Are we ready to move into discussions?
I don't have any further questions.
I don't either.
I do actually, in terms of Mrs. Cottrell, I'd like to know about the medical residency that I believe is your husband and how that impacted your decision to come to Arizona. Because at the time, what I'm seeing in the initial review is, number one, you were pregnant, but then you also, your husband was not sure where he was going. Is that what I'm getting from that? And so therefore he might have been going to Arizona, and so you were in limbo if you were going to Arizona. I guess that's part of my confusion.
Right. Yes. Yeah, so I was pregnant at the time. And so he was still in residency in Louisiana and he was thinking about going to Arizona, but not quite sure. But at the same time, that's the whole reason I switched from doing travel, was because I know I needed to kind of settle in one spot, but I just didn't quite know where. So I was kind of dealing with that in the midst of all this. And that's not an excuse, but that's kind of where my head was at throughout the whole process. Is just trying to figure out what he's doing, how to get situated and stable in one spot and, you know, get things kind of settled for the baby. So.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Dr. Cottrell or Mr. Hall, would you like to make any type of closing statements?
You know, I don't have any other, I mean, other comments other than I am not aware what the matrix is, or so I don't know what we're actually, what you guys are actually discussing about the potential outcome of this. I would just renew my comments again that I think from the questions and answers throughout this board process that it is a somewhat of a confusing process for people who are on a compact license moving. And again, I would just renew my request again that I do think she has been very candid about her situation and candid about what she did and why she did it. And I still continue to believe the advisory letter is the appropriate response to this technical violation. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Josh Greer in discussion. I understand this is, can be a confusing process, but what really troubles me is the renewal of the compact privilege using the Louisiana driver's license. That takes this from, oh, this is a confusing process to, oh, I realized I'm in a bind here. I need to keep working, but I can't renew my compact privilege with an Arizona license. And so I think this does fall within the unlawful practice matrix. And I would move that we offer Dr. Cottrell a disciplinary consent agreement, 90 days probation with an early termination option, a $460 civil penalty, require her to take the jurisprudence exam, require her to provide evidence of notifying employer, payers, and patients, and requiring an ethics course, 6 hours continuing education.
Second.
And for Mr. Halls, that is what the matrix, it's actually, technically she's in the next category, but that is consistent with our unlawful practice matrix.
Mr. Greer, I appreciate that. The question is, I've never seen this matrix and
I'm
not able to find it. So I
understand, but just for the record, that's what it is for.
Mr. Hall, it's on the board's website. I can direct you to it if you'd like.
If you would, please, because each board's website is different. So.
The board's website is ptboard.az.gov. And if you, on that homepage, if you scroll down about halfway, there is a section titled Public Notice and a button that will expand that field called View All. The Unlawful Practice Disciplinary Matrix is linked on that Public Notices page.
Okay. Thank you. I will get it tracked down. I'm sorry, did you say under the Word documents, is that what you said?
On the web, ptboard.az.com.
Yes.
Or .gov, excuse me. Halfway right. down, public notices. On the left-hand side, you'll see.
Okay, I'm there. Okay, yes.
And a button that says view all that will open the public notices page.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's the continuing competence disciplinary matrix.
Unlawful practice disciplinary.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, found it. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, unfortunately, we do continue to see a lot of confusion around owning a compact license and what that does with moving to different states and how that relates to your home state, and it just continues. But it is incumbent on the licensee to really understand their license, what a compact license is, the difference between universal recognition and endorsement, and how those things play into your ability to practice in whatever state that you choose to. I feel like this is important to continue to look at each time we need to.
So I think we still have to take a vote. Is that where we're at?
We do. Yeah.
Okay.
Further.
Yeah. Thank you.
Any further discussion?
The matrix does not specify the number of hours for ethics. Typically,
he said six.
Three. Oh, six. My apologies. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
And I just want to ask, do we have the correct statute cited for unlawful practice? We've got what was cited in the report was 2044.3, 2044.2. I just want to make sure that when we do the consent agreement, we have the correct violation cited.
I'm sorry, I was on mute. I'm okay with the consent agreement only reciting 32, 24, 42.
Mr. Greer, two or three, did you mean?
I meant two.
Offering to practice beyond the scope of practice of physical therapy. Three is obtaining or attempting to obtain a license by fraud or misrepresentation.
I understand that. I'm trying to avoid saddling the licensee with a fraud violation.
Okay.
That's what I'm trying to avoid.
Okay.
Obviously, if the licensee is not going to sign it and wants it to come back and 32, 44, 3, or 14, I'd accept it, but I'm trying to help out here, not make it a bigger problem. But you know, I'm sure the licensee, if she doesn't like that, she can make an edit and we can change it to a different one if she'd like. I think all three of them apply. I'm okay with limiting the consent agreement to 2044.2. Unless the licensee would like it to be a different one.
I just had a real quick technical question on the probation. Does that preclude the physical therapist from continuing to work during the time of the probation?
No.
Okay. I've heard stories from other people, so I just wanted to make sure that I'm fully understanding so I can advise Dr. Cottrell. Thank you.
Yeah, I think the goal is to improve the practice, not end it. So.
Do you have that, Judy?
I believe so.
Okay.
All right. So Mr. Greer moved. Do we have a second?
Bustio.
Okay. Okay. Are you ready for the question?
Yes.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded to offer a consent agreement citing a violation of 32-2044-2. The consent agreement is in accordance with the unlawful practice disciplinary matrix, which includes probation for 90 days with the possibility of termination, early termination after successful completion of the following terms. Continuing education, which shall be completed in 90 days. Courses must be pre-approved, may be completed online, and do not count towards renewal requirements. Continuing education shall be completed in the area of ethics for a minimum of 6 hours. Successful completion of the Arizona Law Jurisprudence Exam, a civil penalty of $460, and evidence of having notified employers, payers, and patients. Dr. Bustio.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
Dr. Hike.
Yes.
That motion passes.
Thank you. Good luck, Dr. Cottrell, and the board will be in touch.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Y'all have a good one.
Okay, so are we still waiting for Dr. Sinish?
I don't know if she's checked in yet.
I believe we are. As I understand it, her course was to end at 10.
Right.
We also have that informal hearing from 9:30.
Right, that's what we're waiting on for Dr.
Sinish. Oh, for Dr. Sinish. Oh, yes.
Would you like to reagendize 12C1, another board business and reports item?
Sure.
Okay. Okay, so this has to do with some potential coursework that the investigative staff is interested in. So in Governor Hobbs's letter to the board that was dated February 15th, 2024, it asked how our board or board employees interact with complainants impacted by provider misconduct and made further inquiries regarding a trauma-informed approach. In seeking opportunities to enhance the board processes to better address the concerns set forth in the governor's letter, as well as carry out the board's mission, staff has identified an education and potential certification course in trauma interviewing. So the board's asked to consider whether adding the completion of training coursework to the investigator's position description is advised. This would help staff to take better advantage of educational opportunities in this area. Examples of training opportunities include, but are not limited to, the National Certified Investigator and Inspector Training, NCIT, offered by the Council on Licensure, Enforcement, and Regulation. That's the CLEAR training. There are many, many other boards also
do that. Ms. Richardson has completed that course already. Ms. Sinek is currently engaged in it as we speak, as a matter of fact. There is also a science-based trauma interviewing offered by a company called Certified FETI called Forensic Experiential Trauma Interview. So both Ms. Richardson and Ms. Sinish have looked into these courses and believe that they would help to augment their knowledge base and their skill set. It would also address some of the concerns that were brought forth, as well as cases that we have all experienced with the misconduct, the provider misconduct. So enhancing the investigator position description has been identified as an avenue to help more readily and better achieve these goals. So the matter before the board is just to determine whether you believe it's advisable to enhance the position description to include trainings of this nature, so the board staff can seek that completion of those courses.
I know, Mindy, you said that you believe the courses are pretty invaluable to you in your interview process. And can you just speak to that for a moment?
I looked into, I have some contacts in law enforcement and social work, social workers that work with law enforcement. And, you know, when you're dealing with victims of abuse or sexual misconduct, I think there's certain skills that are needed by the investigator to try and obtain, I think, the most objective manner in which you obtain factual information that can be accurately represented in a report to the board. And it's not just for the victims, it's also for the respondents. Mm-hmm. You apply the same principles to all of your witnesses and the complainants in this case. And I think it's just a different set of tools that enhance what Dr. Sinus and myself provide to the public when we receive complaints and then go about our investigations.
Great.
I've seen a couple of presentations on the CLEAR training at the FSDPT, and it just looks incredible for an investigator to have that knowledge and background, and just, you know, especially interviewing trauma victims or complainants, and just making sure that you're not adding trauma to the trauma. So I highly support it.
Yeah, CLEAR is basic. CLEAR is, you know, basic investigative tools. FETI, the one that was in your packet,
yeah,
takes it a step further. You're dealing with trauma victims.
Yeah.
And really, it's a separate set of nuanced skills when you're interviewing somebody who has been traumatized by an event, whatever that event is.
Yeah.
Psychological abuse, physical abuse. So it's just a manner in which you approach every person, in the way you approach your interviews.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be sexual abuse. It can be just professional boundaries issues. And, you know, we've seen quite a few cases of those. So it's a way to obtain information from both the victim, complainant, and the respondent.
Yeah, it does sound like it would be a very, very useful tool to have them pursue. So we need to make a motion and
I think the motion, because these courses can change over time.
Sure, sure.
So I think we're asking for the board, whether the board believes it's a good idea to direct staff to seek
potential education that would be beneficial to the position description of the investigator position.
Do we need to vote on that or have a motion on to add that to the job description?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Then I guess I'll speak up. I'm trying to fix my camera here. I think that I agree. I mean, this looks very helpful. We definitely deal with people who have been, you know, injured and harmed. And frankly, with the respondents, there's a lot of need to do that as well. So I would move that we add to the job description a requirement to be trained in trauma-informed interviewing.
Second.
Who did that second? Dr. Hike?
Mr. Leone. No, Mr. Barton did the first. Mr. Leone did the second.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Okay, I think we're ready.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded to direct staff to add training to the investigator position's description to include coursework such as trauma-informed interviewing. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Thank you. That motion passes.
Thank you.
Okay. So has anyone seen Dr. Sinish?
Not yet. Can we stop the recording for a moment?
Sure. Should we take a few minute break as well? 5 minute break?
Yay.
That works. Okay. It's 10:03 now. I'll put it to come back at 10:08.
Thank you.
I'll text Liz too and see how close she is to finish up.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.